Hello, and welcome to I Watch This As an Adult, the podcast where I review movies from my childhood from an adult perspective. And this week I will be reviewing 1995's Mallrats. Hello everybody and welcome to the show. Like I said, today we're going to be reviewing Mallrats from 1995. Excuse the way I sound. I got allergies is going around. I might be sneezing. I don't know. You know, I'm going to hold it back the best I can on this podcast, this on this day. Everybody's got the allergies today, you know, spring's coming and COVID's still around. Hopefully I never get COVID. Hopefully I never get that. But everybody's got allergies in the crib today. I got allergies. My wife has allergies. My daughter has some allergies a little bit. You know, hers is not as bad as my wife and ours, but my wife and mine, excuse me. But the allergies are still there. So it's a very allergenic house. I know you guys are probably like, man, motherfucker, just dust. But yeah, that's not the problem, you know. But yeah, man, it's just allergy season. Like, it happens. We got allergy medicine we've been taking. I'm probably gonna take one after this podcast. I should have took one before the podcast, but I wasn't thinking, and it didn't hit me. It didn't really hit me until I hit record, and I was like, fuck my allergies. So that's kind of my mistake. But anyway, yeah, gonna be reviewing Mallrats. Just had to give you a little disclaimer to why I might sound like a fish underwater or whatever the fuck. But yeah, gonna be talking about Mallrats. Like I said that like three times already. First, I want to talk about a documentary I saw. This is gonna be a very, very 90s show. Today, very, very 90s show. It's kind of a coincidence. I'm talking about a movie that's very, very 90s, and now I'm going to talk about a documentary that's very, very 90s. It's very, very 90s. It's so 90s that the documentary is called Kid 90. So, I watched a documentary on Hulu this past weekend called Kid 90. It's actually a documentary. It was produced and directed by Soleil Moon Frye. That name might not sound familiar. If that name does sound familiar, you're very equipped in your 80s actresses, because Soleil Moon Frye played Punky Brewster in the 80s. So this is a documentary that she made from old recordings, like old video recordings, old tape recordings, because it's audio and visual. You know, it's just her talking about growing up as a teenager in the 90s, because she's got footage of her and all her famous teen friends. She's even got some of her new footage with some of her famous teen friends. Mark Paul Gosselaar's in this documentary. David Arquette's in this documentary. Steven Dorff is in this documentary. There are some. Brian Austin Green is also in this documentary. A lot of people that were like child and teenage stars in the early 90s are in this documentary. And she pretty much just talks about her time growing up in the 90s as a child star transitioning into being a teen star. They talked a lot about her. I hate to be crass about this, but you know me, I gotta be me. Like, they talked a lot about her titties, you know, because Soleil Moon Frye got titties at a very young age. She got tits at like fucking 12 years old, and they talked about that a lot. And she talked about how they didn't treat her like they didn't treat her like a little girl once she got titties. They treated her like a grown-ass woman, you know. And, you know, it's kind of sad, but it happens, you know. She had to go, she went and got a breast augmentation when she was 15? when she was like 15 years old, she finally kind of got those things reduced. She got a breast reduction. Something else that another kid actress from the 80s did, Kim Fields. She's another person I would like to hear about, because like she kind of had that type of thing going on with her too. Like she got big tits at a young age, you know. she developed really early, and then they even did an episode of there's a show, if you listen to this podcast you probably know what the show is. She was on a show called Living Single, and they had an episode about her kind of getting breast reduction surgery, because I think she really got breast reduction surgery at around that time. She waited a little bit. She waited until she was a little bit older. She had to be in like her, I want to say maybe early to mid 20s when she finally got breast reduction surgery. So like she waited a bit longer than Soleil Moon Frye. But yeah, man, I would love to hear her story about like if guys treated her differently when she was a teenager with these just huge gigantic boobs, you know, because like she's another child actress that got that kind of treatment, you know, where it was like, oh god, look at those titties, you know. But I would like to hear it from her mouth. But yeah, Soleil Moon Frye was talking about her titties, I'm thinking about it right now, because Jonathan Brandis, they talk about Jonathan Brandis in this documentary too. I think Jonathan Brandis was a friend of hers. He was even at her breast reduction surgery with her. He was there, and he was her friend, but I think he wanted to be more. I think he really wanted to be her boyfriend. And we're gonna get to Soleil Moon Frye's choice in men in a little bit. But yeah, man, it was like actually fun. It kind of made me nostalgic. I wasn't a teenager in the 90s. I didn't turn 13 till like 1998, you know. So so like I guess you could say I'm like a late 90s, early 2000s teen, you might say, because I didn't turn 13 till I was about like till I was till 1998. So a lot of the 90s as a teen I didn't get to, because I was a little kid, because in 1991 I was like 6 years old or some shit, I think, but five or six, you know. So like I wasn't a teenager in the early 90s. I was a kid, so like a lot of that stuff I was still nostalgic over, because like I remember in the 90s I wanted to be a teenager so fucking bad. I wanted to be a teenager so bad in the early 90s, because it looked so fucking cool to be a teenager in the early 90s. But but my teen years were they were okay, you know. You know, like, whenever you grow up, you know, like whatever time frame you grow up in, you're gonna have the fucking time of your life, you know. It doesn't really matter. But like I really wanted to be a teenager in the 90s for some reason though. But yeah, but like looking at this shit, you know, like just the fashion and what they wore and what they were looking at and what they were listening to, you know, it's just so, it was something that I wanted to get into. Like I wanted to listen to grunge music at an early age. I wanted to listen to gangster rap, you know. like I wanted to do all this shit. But growing up as a kid in the 90s wasn't bad either. We had like some of the best cartoons. We had what the fuck am I talking about? I forgot already. But like I said, we had best cartoons, best toys. We had some of the best toys. Video game consoles. I played Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis a lot, you know, and I had a Game Boy and a Game Gear, you know, growing up. Yeah, I know, Sadiddy, right? But looking back at that old footage she was showing, it was like very very nostalgic, even though I wasn't a teen in the 90s. I was a little kid. But looking at all that shit just made me nostalgic. But yeah, man, she talked about some things. Soleil Moon Frye, let's just get to it. Soleil Moon Frye did not have the best choice of men. She did not pick boyfriends well. And all her boyfriends were older than her. Because I remember, before I get to all those older boyfriends, maybe I should get to all those older boyfriends, but because that'll probably make this stick out a little bit more. She dated Mark Wahlberg for a little bit, who's a bit older than her. He's not that much older than her, but he's a bit older than her. She dated Danny Boy from House of Pain, and he almost took her virginity, I think. She didn't reveal who almost took her virginity, but she said she had a time when she was like 17. I'm gonna say she was 17 years old, and Danny Boy from House of Pain almost took her virginity because they were dating. It was kind of some statutory rape shit because Danny Boy was only 25. I mean, he was 25 years old. Danny Boy was 25 years old dating a 17-year-old. Just putting that shit out there. That's some fucking stat shit. That's some fucking borderline R. Kelly shit. Okay? And like, Danny Boy's still walking around here free. Soleil Moon Frye is, like, in her 40s now. Danny Boy's in his 50s now, by the way. And they meet up at the end, like, that shit wasn't even, like, a crime, you know? Because this new footage, like, she goes and visits Danny Boy. She goes and visits Danny Boy. And, they just act like that shit she just acts like that shit was normal. Like, she didn't see anything wrong with it, you know? Even as a 40-something-year-old woman with kids of her own. I think she has a teenage daughter now, too. You know, she didn't see anything wrong with it. It was kind of weird. It was kind of strange. But the one that got to me the most... Oh, she also dated this kid, Justin Pierce. He was in the movie Kids. And he was also... black people don't know who Justin Pierce is. He was Roach in the second Friday movie. So she dated him for a little bit. He actually died in 2000. I want to say 2000 or 2001. Is when Justin Pierce actually passed away. I think he committed suicide. Yeah, she dated him for a little bit. But the biggest one that fucking creeped me the fuck out more than Danny Boy was she fucking dated Charlie Sheen at 19 years old and she let him take her virginity. She lost her fucking virginity to Charlie Sheen of all people. And this is like Charlie Sheen when he was like, everybody knew he was a fucking scumbag, you know, like, everybody knew, like, what he was into. They knew this nigga, like, was, like, deep with Heidi Fleiss, you know, like, if you don't know who Heidi Fleiss is, Heidi Fleiss was, like, a high-priced madam. She had, like, high-priced hookers in, like, fucking Los Angeles, and Charlie Sheen was one of her biggest fucking customers. Like, Charlie Sheen would have hookers. He had a wife. I forgot the girl's name. The girl's name escaped me, but I remember he had a domestic abuse case in the mid-90s. And he had another, he had like two domestic abuse cases. Because he had another domestic abuse case, I think. This porn chick named Ginger Lynn. She was really big in the 80s and the early 90s. Like, her porno was really big then. She did some things in like the 2000s too. But, because, like, I think she came back for a little bit. She's also in the Turn the Page video by Metallica. She's the stripper / prostitute in that video. But, yeah, I think, like, Ginger Lynn had a domestic abuse case against him. There was another chick who was, like, I think, like, his wife for a little bit. And, like, she had a domestic abuse case against him. You know, and Soleil Moon Frye let this dude take her cookie. You know, like, she let him take her V-card. So her first sexual experience was with Charlie fucking Sheen. Meanwhile, this is where it is. Jonathan Brandis had a fucking crush on her. He said he had a thing for her. She kept that motherfucker in the friend zone. Mark Paul Gosselaar, who played Zach Morris on Saved by the Bell, said he had a thing for her. And I think she said secretly she had a thing for him, and he didn't find out till like the documentary. And he was like, he said, "Whoa, you tell me all this time I had a shot?" He was kind of like, he had that look on his face like, "Whoa, you tell me I had a shot? We could have been together? You serious?" You know, but yeah, he said that he had a crush on Soleil Moon Frye, and he never pursued it, and she never pursued it. But and like she was real close to Stephen Dorff. I heard Stephen Dorff is kind of a douche though, but maybe not him. He was the same age range as her, but maybe not him. But yeah, man, that shit creeped me the fuck out, man. I was like, she lost her virginity to Charlie Sheen. But yeah, man. Anyway, I thought it was an okay documentary. It wasn't what I expected it to be. You know, I thought this was gonna be like a linear story about all the kids of the 90s, but it really wasn't. It was just like home video, home movies. Soleil doing some narration. She threw one of her old child star friends in there. But like, that was the biggest reveal for me, is like she lost her virginity to fucking Charlie Sheen, and she was dating fucking Danny Boy from House of Pain when she was 17 and he was 25. That was the biggest revelation for me. I let her slide with Mark Wahlberg, because Mark Wahlberg wasn't that much older than her. You know, he was a little bit older than her. He was kind of in a statue situation too. But he wasn't that much older than her. I think he's only like, what, maybe 3 or 4 years older than her. You know, he wasn't that much older, but still, he was kind of borderline stash territory too. But yeah, man, that fucking documentary was wild. I think they were talking about like all the 90s kids that did dope. I think David Arquette admitted to smoking crack, you know? Which explains David Arquette. But anyway, yeah, man. Documentary was okay. I don't know if I will rewatch it again. I'll probably have to rewatch it again, because I'm talking about it, but there's probably still some fucking things that I missed. But like, from what I saw, it was just a bunch of home movies spliced together and telling her story. Like the big, like that was the two biggest things that jumped out to me, was they were talking about her titties. She put Jonathan Brandis in the friend zone. She dated Danny Boy, and she fucked Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen took her virginity, which is fucking gross. I hope she got a fucking test after that, because you know that motherfucker had HIV. He had HIV, and I hope she got a fucking test. But anyway, of all people, I'm kind of disappointed. But anyway, but like, that's her life, fuck it. Anyway, yeah, man, documentary is okay. If you want to check it out, you can check it out. If you don't, you don't have to. That was my review of Kid 90. I'll be back with the review for Mallrats after these messages. Today's podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space, so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. And be sure to add our podcast in the "How did you hear about Podgo" section of the application. Okay, guys, Mallrats, 1995. You know, I like to start this thing off. I like to start it off on how I saw the movie as a child. I saw this movie for the first time on cable when I was 14 years old. And at that time, I was the hugest, like the biggest comic book geek. You know, like I started reading comic books when I was... I want to say I started reading comic books really early. I want to say I started reading comic books when I was 5. But like, it wasn't like... I wasn't reading like Superman, Batman, or the X-Men or no shit like that. I was reading like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And not like the Mirage Studios Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I was reading like the Archie Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I was reading like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like the animated Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I was reading Mighty Mute Animals. You know, like comic books like that. I was reading like really, you know, like kid-friendly comics. Because, like, I was really into the Ninja Turtles at the time. Anything the Ninja Turtles were in, I was reading. I think I was reading DuckTales at the time, too. I had, like, a lot of, like, those Carl Banks, like, DuckTales comics also. So, like, I've been reading comics since I could fucking read. But I didn't get really intensely into comics until I was about, like, 9 or 10 years old. That's when I started reading, like, X-Men and Spider-Man and Fantastic Four, and I was reading like The Avengers, and I was reading whenever Black Panther came around. I would read fuck with Black Panther. I was reading Batman. Yeah, I was reading Batman. Read some Superman. Superman's not really my favorite book. No diss to Superman, but it's not really my favorite book. But, like, my favorite ones were, like, Spider-Man, X-Men, and Fantastic Four. Those are my absolute favorites. I love those comics. But after that, I started getting into more adult comic books. I started, like, reading Spawn and Wildcats. And there was another, Gen 13. I was reading Gen 13. Generation X. I like Generation X, too. Like, I've kind of found Generation X to be a little bit more adult to me. A lot of those books, I was reading, like, Witchblade. You know, like, I'm checking in, like, read those books from time to time. So, by 14, I was, like, immersed in, like, comic book shit. You know, I would go to the comic book shop, and like my mom would take me to the comic book shop and buy me like a whole bunch of fucking comic books. She'd buy me like comic book cards, you know. Like I would like trade comic books with kids at school, you know. They're like, hey, this book's good, let's just trade books and all this shit. Like there was this kid that was actually when I was in like middle school, he was like selling comic books for like a dollar. And I would buy them off of him for a dollar. I was like a fucking comic book crackhead. I remember I'd be like, hey man, you got that new X-Men? I'd be like, yo man, give me that new X-Men. I got you, man. He was like, you ain't got no money. You can't buy this X-Men off of me. Please, sir. Please let me get that new X-Men. I suck your dick. It never came to that, but yeah. But I was so much into comic books at that time. Who knows? But anyway, yeah, this movie right here. But like I said, like I was a huge comic book geek at the time. So like this movie like really hit me at the right time. And at the time, 14 years old, I think I was like already kind of like a Kevin Smith fan through his comics. Because like he wrote Green Arrow. He wrote Daredevil. Daredevil is another one. I forgot about Daredevil. Loved fucking Daredevil. Loved reading fucking Daredevil. Cause like Kevin Smith was doing like the Marvel Knight shit. Also, like I said, like, and then he was writing Green Arrow. So like I knew Kevin Smith was. I would see him in like Wizard magazine all the time. So I was already kind of a fan of Kevin Smith. I saw a Dogma. I remember I had a Dogma poster on my wall when I was a teenager. I'd seen that. So like I would go back through his catalog and watch his shit, So, like, I was watching, like, Clerks. And I was watching Chasing Amy, which is, like, two other movies I got to talk about. And I was watching, like, and I stumbled across Mallrats on cable. And I liked it, you know? So, I liked it at the time because, like, it spoke to me, you know? It really fucking spoke to me. It spoke to me even though it's about, like, these, like, fucking white young adults in New Jersey who like comic books, but it spoke to me even though I'm a black teenager in New Orleans, but the common denominator is we all like comic books, you know, so that was the common denominator. It was like, oh, those guys like comic books, I like comic books, it doesn't matter what color they are, but it doesn't matter what race they were, I relate to that shit, you know, so like the movie really fucking spoke to me at the time, so like I was really into it. Let's get into some technical shit now. The movie was written and directed by Kevin Smith, duh. It has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 57%, which I look at it now, it's fair. That's a fair, it's not that great of a movie, it's not that bad of a movie, it's in the middle. The budget for the movie was $6.1 million. It only brought in $2.1 million at the box office, so it underdelivered. It actually kind of failed. This movie does have some fun casting stories, though. The main character, T.S., was almost played by Henry Thomas. If you don't know who Henry Thomas is, Henry Thomas is the kid from E.T. So the kid from E.T. almost got the character of T.S., but they eventually went with Jeremy London, because there's two of them. For the longest time, I got a detour. For the longest time, I didn't know that Jeremy London and Jason London weren't the same person. I believe this is Jeremy London in this movie. I did not know that Jeremy London and Jason London were twins. They're identical twins. And in the 90s, they were like in everything. Because you would see Jason London in something, and then you see Jeremy London in something. I think Jason London is the one that got the most work. Jeremy London, he did things here and there. I think Jeremy London is also the one with like the fucking drug addiction, I believe. But anyway, I believe that's him. I think my wife was talking about them, and she was like, the way you can tell the two of them apart, one's fatter than the other, or some shit like that, she said, like, one's a little bit thicker than the other one. I think Jeremy is the thick one, and Jason is the skinny one, I believe, but, yeah, man, for the longest time, like, I thought they were the same person, because I was like, wow, this dude gets all the work. I remember as a kid, I'm like, this, how does he work? He has the greatest agent fucking ever, because this dude is in every fucking thing. I didn't find out until, I actually used to watch a show called Seventh Heaven. And both of them ended up being cast members on Seventh Heaven. And that's when I found out they were fucking twins. I'm like, yo, they're fucking twins. That's the only way I found out was when they were on fucking Seventh Heaven, and this had to be like 1999 or some shit, I think, or 2000, when I finally found out these motherfuckers were twins. They had like a Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen thing going on, because for the longest I thought Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen were the same person until like they started doing shit together, and I was like, yo, they're twins, what the fuck. But yeah, man, but anyway, like, Jeremy London ended up getting the role. Brody was almost played, by Adam Sandler, but, they ended up casting Jason Lee, who had no prior acting experience before this. He was actually a professional skateboarder before this. Like, he wasn't even in acting, he was a fucking skateboarder before this. So he got the role of Brody. Jason Mewes actually almost got replaced as Jay, in his iconic role of Jay. They were, the studio didn't like Jason Mewes, I heard, from what I researched, and they wanted to bring in either Seth Green or Breckenmeyer to replace him as Jay. Imagine how different and the different dynamic that character would have had with Silent Bob. Can you imagine that shit? And I don't think Seth Green and Breckenmeyer would have embodied that role as good as Jason Mewes did, because that's really fucking Jason Mewes, you know? That's just Jason Mewes being Jason Mewes. I mean, like, it's called, the name of the character is Jay. They didn't even really fucking change the name very much. Jay is short for Jason, you know, so that's that. Kevin Smith also cast his girlfriend at the time, Joey Lauren Adams, in the film, and we get to see her titties. I don't know what it is, man. I was like, Kevin Smith loves to show off his girl's tits, you know. Doing research for this, I didn't know this, but like, he actually shot his wife in a Playboy spot, and like, her tits are out, her cooch is out, and all this shit. You know, like, he just loves to show his girlfriends and just loves to show their titties. I'm just gonna be blunt about it, you know. But like, for a split second, we see Joey Lauren Adams' tits in this movie. Shannon Doherty, Claire Forlani, Ben Affleck, Michael Roker, and Kevin Smith himself round out the rest of the cast. The plot's simple. This movie's just about two slackers walking around the mall trying to get their girlfriends back, because both their girlfriends break up with them at the beginning of the movie. And also T.S. has like a terrorist charge against him or some shit. I forgot what, I totally forgot, but like, it looked like he was trying to shoot the mayor or some shit, but he wasn't. It was just him playing around with his girlfriend. For context on that, he was supposed to be in a play where like, he played like a blue coat. Like, it was supposed to be, like, some Revolutionary War play or some shit like that. And he had, like, a musket. And he was playing around with his girlfriend, played by Claire Forlani. We'll get to her later. He was playing around with her, and he got the gun jammed in her hair. And the mayor was down, and she had Secret Service with her and shit. Or, like, security with her. And they thought that T.S. was trying to shoot the mayor. So, he becomes kind of, like, public enemy number one in the fucking town. Really. So moving on to that, his girlfriend breaks up with him after that, and Brody's girlfriend breaks up with him. Brody's girlfriend, played by Shannon Doherty, we'll get to her later. But anyway, let's just get to T.S. T.S. is fucking annoying to me. I'm gonna be blunt throughout this whole goddamn throughout this whole goddamn review. T.S. is annoying as shit. Like, he's just this, like, irrational, like, lovesick puppy dog. Like, he's almost borderline stalkerish. Like, T.S., I'm gonna describe T.S. T.S. is, like, definitely a dude that would, like, commit a murder-suicide. I see it. I fucking see it. Like, T.S. is so fucking obsessed with this girl, Brandy, played by Claire Forlani, that if this were real, he would lock himself and Brandy in a fucking room together, and he would shoot Brandy, and then he would shoot himself. That's how fucking borderline crazy I find T.S. They try to make it lovable and try to make it harmless, but in real life, this dude's fucking shooting his girlfriend and then shooting himself. Like, it's not healthy. That's all I got to say. Let's move on to Brody. Let's move on to the character of Brody. Brody is a character that I related to a lot. You know, like, he's a totally misunderstood character. A lot of people find Brody to be a dick. A lot of people think that Brody's a douche. A lot of people think that Brody's an asshole. But what I found is that Brody acts out because he hasn't found his purpose yet. You know, and sometimes people don't find their purpose. They don't find what they're meant to do till later in life. Because if you see Brody, later on throughout this whole series, because this is a whole series of movies. If you come back to Brody like 5 years later, he's running a comic book shop. You know, he's got his own comic book shop. I know at the end of the movie they say, oh, he went on to host a late night, to host a Tonight Show or some shit like that, but that shit never happened. You know, him being a comic book store owner is more realistic. Like, that was the most realistic shit. Because, like, he seems like that type of guy, like me, who doesn't want to be stuck in a dead-end job, you know? He doesn't want to be stuck in a dead-end job. You know, he wants to do what he loves. And he found what he loved. He loves comic books. So he was like, I'm going to fucking open a comic book shop. That's what I'm going to do. So, like, he found what he wanted to do later in life. And now he's happy. Totally misunderstood character. About this movie really focuses a lot on like the two main characters, and like everybody else kind of fades into the background. For example, Claire Forlani, she plays TS's girlfriend Brandy, like I spoke of before. She's gone for most of this movie. Like, she's in the beginning, she's in like the first 20 minutes of the movie. And she's gone for at least an hour and 45 minutes. I want to say, I think this movie's like 2 hours. She's gone for an hour and 45 minutes. At the least. We don't see her again until like the last like 45 minutes of this goddamn movie, I want to say. Like, she's gone for a long period of fucking time in this movie. And he's the object. She's the object of TS's affection. And you don't see her throughout most of the goddamn movie. Like, she's gone. First of all, Claire Forlani. Remember when Claire Forlani was supposed to be the shit? Remember when she was supposed to be like the next Julia Roberts, pretty much? Like, she was supposed to be like the next Julia Roberts, and nothing happened after that. Nothing fucking happened after that. Secondly, her accent comes out, because I think in real life she's either Irish or British. I looked it up earlier today and I already forgot what she's supposed to be, or what's her nationality. I think she's either like Irish or British, and like when she talks you can kind of hear she's supposed to be from Jersey, but when she talks you can kind of hear her accent come out a bit, you know, her accent comes out a little bit. So it's probably why she's not in the movie for most of the time. I don't know, but kind of a shame that she's not in most of this movie. Shannon Doherty, who plays Brody's girlfriend, Renee, she's in this movie a lot. She gets a lot of screen time because it's Shannon Doherty in the 90s. I mean, come on. She was on Beverly Hills 90210 and all this other shit. Shannon Doherty was kind of like the female Charlie Sheen, if you think about it. You know, like, she's very difficult to deal with. You know, she was always in some type of fucking scandal and shit. She was like always with all these dudes. Like, Shannon Doherty couldn't keep a man for shit. But yeah, man, Shannon Doherty was pretty much the Charlie Sheen, the female Charlie Sheen of the 90s. That's very, very much. She had a very, very bad reputation in the 90s, but she still kept getting cast and shit. You know, but yeah, man, she's in this movie a lot. Ben Affleck's in this movie also. Moving on. I'm gonna say one good thing about Ben Affleck. He's one of the best Batmans I've ever seen. Moving on. Michael Rooker plays this really over-the-top, overprotective dad that looks like Lex Luthor. Because I was looking at Michael Rooker throughout this whole movie and his performance. Michael Rooker's a great actor, by the way. Like, he's always been good. He's always been a good actor. Lex Luthor, I've always seen him as a Lex Luthor type character. In this movie, anyway. In this movie, I saw him as Lex Luthor. And, Sorry about that abrupt ending there. I had to go deal with my kid who is ironically named Brody. By the way, ironically, she's named after a character in this movie. Kind of inspired me. But I was talking about Michael Roker as Lex Luthor. I was saying that he could be a good Lex Luthor in the 90s. I don't know if they were to, because they were trying to do a Superman movie in the late 90s with Nicolas Cage. And I was saying, like, Michael Roker would have been a good Lex Luthor. And Kevin Smith was attached to the movie before Tim Burton. I don't know if he was like, hey, if I do this movie, Michael Roker is going to be my Luthor. You know, and here I see it. Like I say, Michael Roker is a great actor, by the way. Great fucking actor. But in this movie, he's so over the top and overprotective, you know, as Brandy's dad, Jared, that he, like, you're like, does he want to fuck her? You know? there's a lot of creepy indentations in Jared, Brandy's dad. You know, like, he's kind of a creeper to me. Moving on, Jay and Silent Bob are just doing Jay and Silent Bob stuff. About Jay and Silent Bob, let's talk about them. I find myself, as I get older, really liking these characters less and less. I don't know if that's just me growing up, you know, because as I get older, I really start to wane on these characters. Like, these characters don't really age well, especially in that last movie that they did with Jay and Silent Bob. I forgot the name of the movie, but I watched it. I gave it a chance just to see if I still like these characters, and I don't. I don't relate to Jay and Silent Bob at all anymore. These characters are characters that are just really fucking immature. They're really fucking immature. These are characters I think I grew out of, like, not even 5 years ago. I want to say I grew out of these characters when I was turned 21. Because I remember Clerks 2 came out when I was still in college. And I watched the movie and I didn't relate to it at all. I didn't relate to it. So, like, I was like, you know what? Jay and Silent Bob really get on my fucking nerves now. I was like, you take them out of here. I don't know. It might be a good movie. Who knows? But, so, like, I think I probably grew out of Jay and Silent Bob at like, 21 years old. After I was a teenager. Like, these are characters, like I said, these are characters that don't stand the test of time. Because, like, the characters of their time, they're very 90s fucking characters. Very fucking 90s. And I don't think they're characters that you can continue on with new generations. You know, they're just characters that a certain generation saw and you just fucking grow up and they just fucking grew out of them, you know? You know, like, I hope that Jay and Silent Bob movie that he did, like, a couple years back, I hope that's the last one, because these characters don't age well. That's all I got to say. There is one character in here that I find really fucking disturbing, and that's Trisha Jones, played by Renee Humphrey, because she's a 15-year-old girl who has sex with grown men on camera. Can't do that today. Stan Lee also makes a cameo. Not in Trisha, in the movie. He makes a cameo in the movie, not Trisha, okay? So Stan Lee makes a cameo also. He's in this movie. Rest in peace, Stan. But overall, as a person who's still a fan of Kevin Smith, I love Kevin Smith as a person. He's a great podcaster. He's great at, like, fucking pop culture and talking about movies. He's great at that. Like, when it comes to, like, talking about movies,
He's the fucking Michael Jordan of talking about movies. He's better than me talking about movies. He's way better than me. But, Kevin Smith is kind of like a muse to me. Like, I hope to be as good as Kevin Smith when it comes to talking about movies and talking about pop culture. He's the best at it. I felt nostalgia for this movie, like, as a person who's still a fan of Kevin Smith. But as a person who likes movies, this movie did not age well at all. It's stuck in the 90s. Like this is a movie that's very of its time, and like, it hit a generation of kids and young adults at a right time, you know, at the right time, like in the mid 90s, it talked about things that nobody was talking about in like the mainstream, but like, nobody in 1995, nobody was talking about Wolverine in the mainstream. I'm like, shit. Like, Hugh Jackman probably didn't know who Wolverine was in 1995. You know, like, this is, Kevin Smith did his part. Like, Kevin Smith did his part in bringing comic book culture to the mainstream. Like, he did his best. In every movie he's ever done, you know, he's tried to throw in at least some type of comic book reference in here, because he has a passion for it, like I do. You know, like, he has a passion for it. Like, he has a passion for comic book culture, and he wanted to bring it to the mainstream. He wanted to bring this thing that he loved into the fucking mainstream, and I fucking adore him for it. You know, and like, that's why I consider him just an important part of pop culture. But as a movie, Mallrats is very, very transitional. When I watched Mallrats, I just sat there as a 35-year-old man, and like I said, felt nostalgia, but as a movie, I felt nothing. I felt empty. You know, like, there was nothing in this movie where I was like, oh yeah, I still relate to that. Oh yeah, yeah, uh-huh, yeah. But it's very transitional. Like I said, not a great movie, not a bad movie, just a middle of the road movie. I gave it a 3 out of 5. Join me next week when I'll be talking about 1997's. Oh God, this one's going to be a doozy, because I'm going to talk about Turbo, a Power Rangers movie. Pray for me. See you guys later. Peace.